morning, ladies and gentlemen. You're tuned into another show with the illustrious Anthony Update. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We got a special surprise today. Thank you, guys. Just letting you know again, don't forget, you want to stream us online around the world as planetaudio.org.nz/update or 104.6 FM. Tuned into the best tech, coolest show in the world, Update. Thanks for coming in. So, ladies and gentlemen, I have an amazing guest in the studio today and a brilliant friend, a great mind, Mr. Andrew Bates.
Thank you for having me. No. It's lovely to be here in the Planet FM studio here at Looney Tech Campus.
At the Looney Tech Campus, that's correct, my friend. Yep, yeah, where you got your degree, wasn't it, actually?
No, I got my 4 degrees from the University of Auckland.
Oh, good.
No, you didn't finish, that's right.
No, I didn't finish. No, too hard. So having too much fun with a woman.
Yeah, right.
Cool. So, ladies and gentlemen, so we have brilliant Andrew. He's got a mind of knows most things that's happening. But in fact, between the both of us, we pretty much can replace Google, couldn't we, Andrew?
We might have to move to Australia to do that.
What's the longest river in the Sahara?
A river in the Sahara? I believe by its nature the Sahara is a desert and there aren't any. But there is that depression, sort of just down the coast of Libya, I suppose it is. Yeah, I forget.
Tallest mountain in South America?
No.
Oh, fuck. Oh, maybe we Language. Need Google. Oh, maybe we need Google. Right, so anyway, yeah, okay, good stuff. So, yeah, we got Andrew, and he is absolutely right. We are going to mention about how Google's thinking of pulling out of Australia. Yeah, in fact, what are your thoughts on that, my good friend?
I wouldn't say that... well, I mean, they're basically threatening the Australian government to try to influence their policy.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess they've got a lot of power, right? I mean, and they make $5 billion a year from...
There are other search engines. I mean, a lot of people are using DuckDuckGo now. They don't like how invasive Google is in their lives.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 50-50 on this. I really do. I can actually sit in on the fence, which I do quite a lot, don't I? Sit on the fence. I think the main thing that I think is Australia, in their right to make the law... I just don't think it's the most smart solution. Using a law just to bluntly force out a technology company, for me, feels like going back and banning, you know, flush toilets in the 15th century, you know? Why just ban it? Because you don't like it. If the media companies, these bozos that run them...
I think the thing that the Aussies are pushing is that there's a property rights violation. I don't know if that's the case.
It is interesting. But the thing is, it's not probably like violation under the current law, because Google's obviously there and they've been existing. There's no lawsuits against them.
Mm.
That's the point. The law's having to change for it to be a property rights violation. Do you see what I mean? So that does stem up a bit of a different thing.
Yeah, it looks like the Aussies are moving to recognise a private property rights violation that they don't currently recognise.
That could be interesting. That's an interesting way of doing it.
Mm.
Hmm. The main thing, yeah, okay. So we got that on. So we're going to be talking about people that are moving off Facebook. We've got a couple of other options. Going to be talking about this, maybe some of the electric cars. What's the solution to that? Yeah, we've got quite a few things for you today. And so, in fact, just on that, my friend Andrew, you've been thinking about moving off Facebook and LinkedIn and all the rest yourself, haven't you? So what?
Oh, I'm certainly scaling down my Facebook operations.
The amount
I use it.
Yeah.
I'm still on Twitter, but I've got a Parler account. I'm moving away from like the big tech accounts. Of course, Parler's not back online yet.
No.
But if there's a market driven
solution.
Yeah, solution with new service. I'd be interested in going back to it. I think it's more developed as a competitor to Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Then other things are like Rumble is to YouTube.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think most of them are still pretty sucky, and I'm going to make my own. But look, I want to.
Have you got a name for you?
Yeah, I do. It's called Up. Up.network or Up.social at the moment. If people want to join a better network, Up.network, go there. It's going to be better than Facebook, I reckon.
Well, you have a new service called Stuff Up?
Whoa, you really gave it to me. I've got up.stream, so you go against the stream. Look, I want to talk actually on a subject that's been in the silly news for the dumb old News Talk ZB show, and that's about how parents can't afford to buy their kids all these devices in schools.
Too bad.
And I've got some hard feelings on this. I want to rant about it. Basically,
off you go then.
Good. Here we go. we've got what's been going on, and it's all these primary schools are asking kids, teachers, the kids to have laptops and devices in the schools, and I think it's a waste of time. Things are a waste of time. All right, let me rant while Andrew's coming up the rebuttal. Here we go. Got my opportunity. Right. So what's happening in stupid schools is principals love shiny objects, okay? And they're going, let's get every kid one of these iPads, which are a waste of time. Okay, let me tell you straight. I've been running a startup for 5 years, and I'm always trying to recruit software developers in New Zealand. The problem is, all these so-called technological educated kids who have been given devices from the age of 4 do not know how to do anything really productive in IT. They're all just using it to be able to Instagram themselves. So they're not really learning IT. They're not really learning computer science. And so I just think it's a waste of time because, you know, they're coming out of school and they don't even know really computers. They don't know engineering. They just simply know how to open an app, draw a picture. What do you think?
I would say that getting computers in kids' hands in their age makes them more familiar with, you know, the tech side of it, particularly just, you know, the front end, the user end.
Mm.
And it's going to encourage a few questions like, well, how did that happen? How does that work?
Yeah.
And so it could encourage greater participation in STEM subjects, which wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah, I know.
Not that the government should ever try to engineer that.
Or, exactly.
You know, intervene.
Amen, bro. But you see, that's kind of the cliche thought process, which is get them familiar with these devices, right? And that's what I almost went along with it myself, right? Like, you're interacting with this device, therefore you'll start learning the device. But actually, it doesn't turn out like that. It's almost like training a chef how to be a chef by letting them eat heaps and heaps of yummy food.
I like that. That's good.
Thank you. Thank you. And I've tried that bloody way, and I still don't know how to boil an egg. So the thing is, when you're using a computer, you're really using a company's interpretation of computer science into a GUI, a graphical user interface. The truth is, they dumb it down. A computer is dumbed down so much so that we can make it easy. And if you want to learn computer science, you should use a pen and paper. You really should. You should get, when you think of the man who invented computers, Alan Turing, he didn't even know what a computer would look like. It was all written in mathematical code. It's all maths. And he was a genius, you know. We don't teach enough. Yeah. Oh. Oh, well, that was one of his sides. But no, he was he was cool. I liked him. And it's good to have Andrew in the studio here. But no, I truly thought that's the way to learn computer science. And I can attest to this because when I was studying computers, I thought I knew what I was doing because I knew how to use the interface. It wasn't until literally sort of reading books on the how a flip-flop works and how code is compiled that I'm proficient with a computer.
Yeah, look, foundation-level knowledge is important. I guess one way to compare it would be to say with things like Wix and Weebly and WordPress, people are able to create their own websites now by, you know, drag and drop.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
But if you can do the code stuff, you can make a more interactive,
yeah,
more intensely developed,
yeah, amen,
website.
Exactly. Amen.
But that's not to say that if people are getting this familiarity at the higher level,
yeah,
that they won't, that there won't be people, that it will discourage people from going into code. It's probably, I'd say that it enables more people to get into it. And so there are, you know, just as you, there are apps that you, the way I see things moving,
yeah,
is that people will be able to develop apps without actually doing the coding,
yeah,
themselves.
Yeah. Look, I respect that, and I think it's not just a one way or the other. I think having some experience with the interface and some familiarity is good, but I think what's happening, just like you talked about WordPress, going back to that, That's fine, but the thing about the industry is it's changing every year. Wix had a different interface last year to make websites to what it does this year. So if you're introducing 9-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, and 10-year-olds to how to use a graphical user interface with an Apple iPad and open an app that allows you to record your voice, the thing is that interface is only one iteration, which will probably be obsolete by the time they're finished college. So it'd be like if you want to make a generation of kids know how to make web development, if you do them WordPress at age 9, they'll never get a job. They're no use to the industry. That's sort of what we're doing. But if you taught them, okay, this is what a database is, this is what's called back-end, this is what's called front-end, now there's a whole lot of different options around that.
Yeah, but you've got to walk before you can run, right?
Yeah.
So by increasing their exposure to these things at an early age, you're actually going to get them asking the question, how does this work?
Yeah. No, I think we can, and I think we can get exposure, and I think what's the thing is that conversation isn't just sort of, okay, guys, here's some computers, some generic computers. What they're pushing now is brand new, latest 4K iPads. And the idea, and this is the conversation because mum's a teacher, is they say last year's technology is out of date. So they're trying to stay with kind of the cool rather than the exposure, like you say.
Well, if they're going to fund that out of their pockets, their own pockets, that's fine. That's not really a question.
Within reason, but they're not. They are funding it by taxpayers' money. They really are. Huge budgets in schools. Really, you know, they talk about not having enough, like, classrooms. The IT budget's now for schools. Because I got a contract at King's School, obviously the private, but the millions that are going into computers. Because the thing is, we're buying branded stuff too. They're not buying cheap Linux boxes. They're buying top-of-the-line software from Apple. Yeah. See what I'm saying? So anyway, so I think we agree somewhat on that. Should we move past that now? Should we kibosh that? All right, let's just get into a little bit of, if that's okay with you, I almost want to get right off this and almost start talking about what's going on water.
Oh, the America's Cup?
Yes.
Big event today. Hopefully not the last day.
No.
I'd love to see the Americans come back and win too today, but a little staring down the barrel of, you know, if we're looking at the tech aspect, it looks like they've got control issues.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that is from the foils up forward or from the plane on the back of their rudder. Sometimes you wonder if their rudder's deep enough or whether the rudder just gets overpowered. See, the more surface area you have on your rudder, the more control you get, but then you've got more drag. So there's a drag, like a speed control trade-off.
Okay, because this is interesting. So Andrew knows quite a bit about this technology, and I think, like most of us, we don't know what the hell's going on with some of these boats, but they're pretty cool, right? So is it true that the data is being broadcast from there, from the sails and everything, back to sort of a database somewhere, and then back to the boat?
Yeah, that's right. The sensors on the boat and the recorders are actually transmitting to a central database.
Okay.
And then coming back to the boat, you'd think they'd get it live on the boat.
Yeah.
But no.
Was that a rule change?
I don't know about that.
Okay. So these foils.
That's my understanding.
That's because I was just watching it. So we were talking about, like, they're basically using aerodynamics, aren't they? Really? They're using
fluid dynamics.
But it's the same as a plane, eh? Same as an aeroplane.
Well, a plane and a sail, they're both going through a medium, a fluid medium.
Yeah.
Air, and then entirely, in the case of a plane, and air and water, seawater, in the case of an America's Cup foiling boat or a foiling moth.
Foiling, don't fall
or,
off.
Or a displacement boat. I mean, it has its rudder and its keel going through the water, its sails going through the air.
Do you think they're using AI, by the way? This is a thought when they're collecting the data off the boat. Do you think there's some algorithms working out, you know, how far to pull that sail in?
I understand that was an issue in 2017.
Really?
Or 2013, sorry, when, Oracle, the American team, came back.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That they had the control, that they've been recording how their boat would go.
Wow.
And that the controller was powered by human beings when they made their comeback.
Yeah.
But that the actual settings were determined by the computer.
But, wow.
You know, that's a long time ago. not sure that was...
Wow, old Larry of Oracle. That would be interesting. So maybe they were the first AI that was going on. Okay, cool. All right, well, on transport, on the news lately has been this whole thing about bringing electric cars, right? And I've been like, I'm sitting on the fence again, right? Because I'm sort of like, yeah, I like electric cars and stuff, but I'm a little bit hesitant. I know how often my phone goes flat, and I'm just like, hoping that we don't jump into this too much. And, yeah.
Well, it shouldn't be forced. That's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Cars liberate people. They allow people to go and travel by themselves without being constrained by public transport options.
Yeah.
Schedules.
Yeah.
And so it's great if we can make cars more readily available to more people and have basically lower cost transport. Now, if the government basically raises the costs or actually bans fossil fuel-based cars,
mm-hmm.
then they're raising the cost of transport. You think back to the 80s before the Muldoon era tariffs were taken off when Roger Nomics came in.
Mm.
You'd have a lot of one-car families.
Yeah.
And that car would typically go to the husband who was going off to work.
Yeah.
But when those tariffs came off, it actually liberated those families. So that now the wife would also own a car and she'd be free to get around.
Yeah.
So that's the thing where raising costs, basically it hurts the people with the least access to wealth or the least access to spending money.
Yeah.
The most.
Mm.
You know, I've been in a Tesla. They're fantastic fun.
Yeah.
but... you know, they're a wealthy man's car or a wealthy woman's car, a wealthy person's car. Look, they're good fun, but you've got to
share an opinion.
You shouldn't be you shouldn't be forcing people into them or forcing people out of fossil fuels because a lot of people won't be able to afford electric cars.
Yeah,
and then you're forcing them basically onto public transport.
Yeah, we both hate walking. Force, don't we, buddy?
I believe so.
Yeah. Generally hate force. Yeah.
Initiation of force.
That's the key there. Remember that, kids. Write that down in your little journal if you got something out of this update. Right. So there's too much we agree with, which is really annoying. Now, Andrew's got some tech questions for me he wanted to ask, so because of my beautiful brain and experience in computers.
Flash. Was shut down this week.
Yes.
And I see that one of the Chinese cities was running its transit system using Flash, or at least while the background infrastructure wasn't run by Flash, the GUI, General User Interface, was actually run using Flash.
Yeah.
And so then the guys who control the trains could no longer control the trains because they couldn't see it. So basically they stole the software. Why was Flash shut down?
Yeah.
What were its virtues and what were its vices?
Oh, what a question. Oh, you're going to my heart, my friend. All right. Well, I'll give you the what was considered the public response, and then I'll give you the real story. So let me give you the simple story, which was Mr. Steve Jobs came out and said, excuse me, everybody, but we find that Flash has got too many security vulnerabilities and the performance is too slow. So on the first iPhone, they said, we will not support Flash. Boom. And he literally dropped it in this huge kind of, here he does his seminars. He goes, and today, dun, 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 we'll be announcing removal of Flash off all our phones. And the audience went, yay. And then Adobe and a few PC people went, boo. And that was it. And everyone just thought, took him as gospel as, oh, yeah, Flash was never good enough. And it also wasn't performance enough. And all the geeks, because geeks hate beautiful things at the moment. Sort of engineers, they sort of like, wasn't smart enough in the back end, so we hated it anyway. But that's the political correct front end story. But let me give you the real juicy story. Let me get angry about the lack of Flash. So let's just start with basically the guy that invented the old the World Wide Web.
Al Gore?
I'll bring it up. Sir so-and-so from England. But long story short, the World Wide Web was really just a mishmash of what most people could do with folders, surfing folders on a computer. And a World Wide Web, which is a browser, was just a way of quickly being able to navigate text documents, images, and folders in one page, right? It was super lightweight. That was the whole point of HTTP. It was designed to browse. It's a browser. That's called a web browser. Okay, and because we only had at the time two tech companies, Microsoft and Apple were in some weird world, we never reinvented the World Wide Web. We've just added to this rubbish HTTP from the beginning. Okay, so, yeah.
Tell us, what was the relationship between Flash and Adobe and Java and Sun Microsystems?
Okay, cool. So the main thing is Adobe had no idea about the web. They only made 2D graphic design tools. It was a company called Macromedia. I'm sure most of you guys have heard of Dreamweaver. So there was actual enlightened people in America who said, look, the internet, the web is crap, it's rubbish. Let's invent a product called Macromedia. And they called it Macromedia Dreamweaver, and then they made Macromedia Adobe Flash, okay? When Adobe got big, they went on a buying spree, and they bought Macromedia out and rebranded it. And you talk about Sun Microsystems and Flash, right? And no, Java, I think you probably want to know. Yep, so Java was an open-source programming language that was mostly a back-end tool. And then what some clever open-source people did is managed to convert it to front-end in the browser by using this thing called JavaScript, which is... you must have chewed peanuts on my show. Hope you're allergic. So we got basically JavaScript. Now, Sun Microsystems basically were... wanting to bit a bit of buying spree anyway. So they bought JavaScript. But long story short, going back to Adobe Flash, is Adobe were making so much money out of Adobe Photoshop stuff, they never really innovated Flash. So long story short, to really summarize it, the World Wide Web was always made pretty rubbish for what we want it to do. The only solution to a complex front-end GUI was Macromedia Flash. They invented it. They didn't really have the team to make a great product, but they made a good product. Adobe bought it, never really bug fixed it. They never put security layers in it, and they didn't improve it. And therefore, by the time Apple came around, their phone didn't want to increase the processor speed to run Flash. There you go. That's the long story, Andrew.
Oh, thanks for that. Are you going to turn me back?
Oh, thanks very much for that.
Bernard. Sir Bernard Timmersley. There we go. So who invented the World Wide Web was...
Oh, you mean Tim Berners-Lee.
Yeah, Sir Tim Berners-Lee. There you go.
Speaking of transport and tech.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just thinking about and the foiling arms.
Oh, right.
Do you reckon we could see foiling arms being used in transport around Auckland? We've got a lot of waterways. We've got ferries. Mm-hmm. Ferries don't go up as far as Greenhithe, where you hail from.
Oh, yeah.
Nor do we really see any ferry use on the Manukau. Now, the Manukau is a highly tidal harbour and often at mudflats.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's say that train that goes to Otahu, we're extended down to Otahu Port. Mm-hmm. You could then have a ferry terminal there. Mm. Which could take you to anywhere from the airport,
yep.
like they do in Venice,
yep.
or across to the Awhitu Peninsula,
yep.
Or up into Blockhouse Bay, the other bays on the northern side.
Yeah, amen. Yeah. Oh, some beautiful places. Oh, absolutely.
The government's, they're not spending basically on the infrastructure. I mean, you could have foiling ferries that go around where the water is.
Yeah.
That are limited by the tide, but if you've got hydrofoils, then not hydrofoils, hovercraft, those can go over the mud.
Oh, good point. Look, I underutilized waterways in New Zealand. Such a shame, man. Most beautiful harbours, two adjacent harbours. Why the F do we not?
Don't we have canals?
Why don't we have canals? Why don't we connect them?
Portage Road, Blockhouse Bay, and also Otahu, and one from Riverhead through to the Hokianga Harbour.
Absolutely. But look, let me even take this more philosophically. Okay, we live on a blooming island. And we think of transport.
It's actually Yes, we live on an island.
Oh, but there's the rest of New Zealand.
Actually, there's 54 islands in the New Zealand
archipelago. Oh, there we go. Well, that's good. Well, the main thing is that I truly think transport's going to transition away from being A to B to being a place of itself. And I think like one example of this will be self-driving cars will be little offices. So you'll be able to sit there, you'll be able to do all your work.
And not get beheaded.
Enjoy and then saw.
You know about that? The guy that was watching a movie in the back of his car and he was being driven along the motorway by his Telstra. Tesla. And basically a sky blue truck pulled out onto the motorway and the car didn't pick it up. And he, the car went speeding past the truck that wasn't there and actually was there. And
that's terrible, but humans do that quite a bit too.
Yeah, they've still got a wee bit of work to go with the with the technology, but
sure. But what I'm saying is, if people don't think of their transport as a means to a place, but is a place, then you utilizing the water could be a beautiful thing. So, you know, you almost have shared office spaces in a boat. You have teleconferencing calls in a boat. You can kind of get around and enjoy being in a boat. And our harbour, how cool is that? You basically have, you know, the big waterway that picks you up from Riverhead, doing your meetings.
Terminals at Browns Bay and Milford
Browns
and Takapuna.
Bay. Amen.
Or both sides of Takapuna.
Exactly.
So you have it by where the...
We need to get rid of the stupid RMA so we can start doing this. I mean, there was a submission to put a lovely ferry terminal at Browns Bay, but all the old NIMBYs, retirees, are living off the...
Well, I mean, the way you could do that, the way you could actually spur that with private investment is to say, right, this reef here at Browns Bay, we're gonna sell it off.
Right.
And you can do what you like with it, but you've got to build a ferry terminal that connects through to
absolutely
through the land. And so people get to run like a casino and nightclubs that go 24 hours.
Absolutely.
Off basically the
coast. There's not enough win-win. There's enough win-win. People always think it's A or B, but you can win-win. You could have there's so many opportunities for that, where a developer comes in, takes a part of it, looks after himself, and gives the community something in return.
Well, but the return should be the service. It shouldn't be the asset. See, I don't believe in this thing where it gets handed back after 99 years. If someone's actually going to develop it, they're the one who created the value.
Well, whatever the contract is, to be honest, in negotiation.
This is the point I'm making, is that, you know, it shouldn't just be a hand back to the community after 99 years. I'm saying they are the people who've created the value, therefore they are the ones who should own the property.
Sure. But then can you have a service contract for perpetuity? That would be the only hard thing. Yeah, but very hard to say, I will commit to running a ferry service for 4,000 years from here. Here on in. See what I mean?
You just have to provide the infrastructure. Yeah, I take that point.
So you know, all of a sudden the CEO goes, nah, stuff it. But look, yeah, well, you know, I agree, but not enough intellectual thought's gone into that, to be honest. We use cliches, which I hate, you know, like not that conversation, but this conversation of PPPs. Ugh, yuck, I hate that word because it's just so, like, we don't really think intellectually about how to work side by side with developers. We just basically, you know.
I think the lesson from Ronald Coase is you need to get as much of what is in public hands into private hands, because then the property can transfer to the highest value user. We need to allow things like mudflats, which we've got plenty of in Auckland.
Oh, amen. Amen.
To be utilised to the highest value.
Oh, don't worry.
Then we can actually have this explosion of tech. I think we've got a caller who's trying to...
Oh, really? Oh, well, you answer that and see what the tech question is. But look, while he's on his political rant, me and Andrew probably will do
economics
a political
rant.
Show. Economic. Turn your similar volume down. God, I hate these mobile phones. Anyway, long story short is our waterways are beautiful when you can use technology to get around them. I absolutely agree. We can use those waterways. It's a beautiful way to get around. And a new range of hovercrafts, you're right, Andrew, that uses some sort of foiling and blah, 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 blah. That's all good. But let's stick back onto my techie tech.
GameStop.
Yeah, GameStop. So you guys probably heard... Now, let me paraphrase it. All right. So, GameStop was in the news because they share price just really soared, but the how much they were actually making as a company... Actually, you better explain it, Andrew.
Well, thanks, Anthony. Way to drop that in. Yeah, so basically they're a retail mall-based supplier of games.
Mm-hmm.
And the market's been moving away from that, and they are quite heavy in terms of costs of stores and rent. So investors have been looking to, basically short sell them to bring the price down. So let's just take a second to think about short selling. Stock markets or capital markets guide investment in funds into the expansion of certain industries.
Yeah.
And so the more efficiently stocks price... stocks are priced.
Yeah.
The better investors are signaled as to what they should be pouring more and more money in. Right. And short selling actually increases the efficiency of the markets by basically allowing those who believe that something is overpriced to profit from the reduction of its price.
Okay.
So what they would do is they would borrow the shares from a stockbroker.
Yeah.
Who would take it from one of his clients' accounts. They would sell that at the current market price. They'd make their announcement about why they were short selling, hoping to influence the market for the price to drop.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the price did drop, if they were right and they convinced the public that the shares were overpriced, then when the price dropped, they would then buy that back, return the shares to stockbroker, who would then pop it back in his client's account.
Right.
Now, what happened was that in the case of GameStop, that's actually a good thing. But in the case of GameStop, there was more than 100% sold.
Right.
So here's the thing. If the price of the stock goes up, then you sold it at a particular price and the price goes up and you've got to buy it back at a higher price. And what's more, you've got to cover the cost of the dividends in the meantime.
Okay.
So basically, while hedge funds are motivated to get a quick return, to get in, sell it, give the news that lowers the price, and then buy it back and return it to the share broker for a quick return, these guys are now in a case where they've sold the stock. The stock price has gone up because a whole bunch of retail investors, whole bunch of millennials have bought the stock up. They're not selling. The price is going through the roof. And in the meantime, the hedge funds are covering whatever dividends might be paid and having to basically being faced with a position where they're short the stock and they need to buy it back at the much inflated price. So there's a lot of people who don't like short selling. They basically think it's like fractional reserve banking, that you're basically selling something you don't own and that you've borrowed.
Yeah.
That you shouldn't be able to sell.
Interesting take, bro. Interesting take on that. Do you mind if I ever explain that back? Because from...
Yeah, explain it in your words, and if you've got a theory, I can point out.
The moral side is really interesting because sort of like it's all been driven by Reddit. So there's all these nerds saying... I mean, their argument is that the market is all just a game and it's not based on any sort of ethical principles. It's just people making money.
Yeah, I mean, my point to that would be that the market is based on the ethical principle of the right of an individual to trade with others by mutually agreed terms, by mutual consent to mutual benefit. So it's basically an expression of individual sovereignty.
Sure. No, I don't mean it from a fundamental. I mean, like, the simple truth is it makes the market more stable.
Because short selling makes a market more efficiently priced.
Yeah, I get it. Because they're actually signaling that this is where the industry is going.
If you're a hedge fund and you're just a long-only hedge fund, which means you only take long positions in stocks, what you can do is you can buy the stock and then you can announce to everyone, we've bought the stock because it's this.
Okay.
And that provides upside, but positive pressure on the price to raise the price. But there was, without short selling, there's no easy, I mean, you can buy puts, but there's no easy way to talk down the price of the stock and to actually... act in the market.
Yeah.
Because
you
can't sell something that you don't own.
Yeah, I get it.
Unless you can borrow it.
Yeah, I get it. No, that's cool. Yeah, but what I'm saying is the Reddit people, the nerds who almost flawed the system by artificially getting all their mates to buy the stock, all the gamers, they thought, we're the cool guys. We're the good guys because we're...
Look, there's been for 2,000 years, going back to Jesus overturning the... the tables in the temple.
There's
been a hatred of people who work in finance.
Right.
There was a long time of basically particular religions dislike of another religion that allowed people to charge them interest.
Oh, right.
I don't want to go into which those religions are.
Oh God! That's not on the table today. Oh my God!
But this is what was also driving those Reddit users is that they thought they were smashing the big boys.
Yeah.
And, the hedge funds are basically people who are convincing other people to let them invest their money and to make money for them.
Yeah, no, it's a good take. So I'll just quickly whittle that down, which is very...
I would say, look, here's the thing. You can make money if you see a stock that is more than 100% oversold and you buy up all the stock.
Mm.
But so long as you're not the last person left holding that stock. But I think really the fundamental motivation for the Reddit nerds is destruction.
Yeah.
It's hatred of hedge funds.
Yeah, good side on that. There's a good side on that, my friend, because the narrative was getting a little bit too swayed. And there's so many of these important issues, they get swayed into the kind of cool, oh, the nerds are taking on the banks and they're so radical. And it's like, actually, no.
Well, no, not. I mean, capital markets, investors, hedge funds, people that lead to stocks and capital.
Yeah.
Stocks being more efficiently priced and therefore capital being more efficiently allocated.
Yeah.
Actually, perform a service for society by making sure that the funds that are available to society are invested in the industries that which return the greatest amount by delivering the most value for consumers.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, totally get it. And I mean, look, I mean, I've never liked computer gamers, so anytime I get to hate on them, I don't mind. You know, I've ranted on computer gamers. So on this time, they just got off their World of Warcraft for a couple of hours, emailed a few of their mates and said, let's burn a few pension funds.
And what a wonderful note to end that story on.
All right, good. Gaming. Right.
Signal.
Okay. Do you want to ask me about that a little bit?
Yeah. What can you tell your audience about the various messaging systems that people are using? I mean, a while ago, people thought that you used to be able to interact with other people through WhatsApp, on Facebook, through messages just using the browser without getting the app. And then they said, well, you can no longer do that on your mobile. You have to have the app.
Yeah.
And what's more, people used to use WhatsApp because it was a free data service that you could call on and it was encrypted and they thought it was good security. And then Facebook bought it.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing a movement away from that. Some people are going to Telegram, which is used by Russian dissidents, but it's not open source.
No.
Whereas Signal is open source.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about that movement?
Good stuff. All right, no problems. So, I mean, Andrew's right. I mean, there's a new plethora of peer-to-peer communication tools. So peer-to-peer communication, and also they're encrypted. Okay, so there's two parts to the security, okay, if you're looking at this. One is peer-to-peer communication means that when, let's say I'm talking to Andrew, my "Hello, Andrew, how's your day?" doesn't go back to a central server and then get pinged to Andrew. So that's some communication channels do that. Peer-to-peer is that the internet routes "Hello, Andrew," doesn't go to the actual head office effectively. It just goes to you, right? Now, that's the cream of the crop if you want basically uninterrupted communication because, now on top of that you have this thing called encryption, correct? Now, encryption is you basically all should be watching the Imitation Game if you need to know what encryption is. So you can understand the first encrypted machine, the Enigma.
There's actually a better movie called Enigma, but if you want to watch Keira Knightley, fine, watch Imitation Game. But if you want to see Kate Winslet and a better movie,
as long as you understand the Enigma, I think that's the same thing. To a degree. But if you get encryption, that's fine. Now, the only adage on that, of course, with the sad thing is that the American government, NSA, does have the power to unencrypt certain platforms, but the new sophisticated encryption, even the NSA can't unencrypt. Basically, getting into a strange world here, but effectively, the encryption, there's always a catch-up game. If a new platform, if it's encrypted, it's sort of a lag of about 5 years, sort of gut feeling almost, before the American government can unencrypt it, generally. That's basically a consumer-level product. So sometimes, those people know that. Now, the other thing about these platforms is, because we live in the capitalist world, they have to make money at some point. And this is the only thing. There is still no such thing as a free lunch. This is a very simple premise.
Right, and Signal's not doing advertising. It's basically being funded by donors.
Yeah.
In fact, the guy who sold WhatsApp to Facebook has been plowing money into Signal, but where is that going to end?
Exactly. So I'm of the opinion that we should get used to paying for services on the internet and get used to it right now.
You mean like Dropbox?
Yeah. Yeah, pay for it.
Or like Google Drive, you get above a certain limit.
Yeah, well, I don't even think the monetization is good. I think we should get used to microtransactions, which is the whole blockchain, Bitcoin. Microtransactions is what it's all about. You pay 1/100 of a cent or 1/1,000,000 of a cent.
A wise man in Arizona once told me, if the service is free, you're not the consumer, you're the product. Basically, people are taking your data and selling you down the line.
Yeah.
Well, if you're not seeing adverts,
Yeah. In other words, so everyone wants something free, but they keep complaining. So I reckon you're almost better, you know, better the devil you do than the devil you don't. The simple truth is we get Facebook and their services free to us because we know that they can market to us because they know who we are. They collect our data and metadata, right? And I'm of the opinion that I don't care. Me personally, I make that conscious choice. My personal conscious choice is, you have my data because I would rather you sell me ice creams. I don't have that much interesting to say. Me. Now, I almost would rather have a Telegram if it was a paid service, because then I know this is the deal. So all I'm saying is this, they cannot escape that simple truth, is you don't get anything for nothing. So if you want a peer-to-peer encrypted service where no one can know what you're doing...
Tends to awful. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
There we go. So that's my only thing. We've been too naive. So we keep hating on Google, and you're talking about that horrible service DuckDuckGo, which I can't stand. In fact, let me stick up for Google. Everyone knows I love them.
You're a closet Russian. It's Russian interference.
I like Russians. I think they're awesome. In fact, that's another thing. I think you know, in fact, we'll go there just for a bit. I can't believe how annoying the rest of you... You know, Russia liberated a bit, you know, from... Oh, we better not go there. But basically, I'm sick of people beating up on them. That's all, okay? That's what I'm going to say.
That's fairly interesting.
Yeah. It's easy to throw stones. Look at the own mess we've got in our own country. Let's sort our own country out. So, So anyway, long story short, back to Google. I bloomin' love Google. And anyone that doesn't love them, I get pretty angry with. You know, the truth is you do your own Google, people, if you think you're so damn great. It's not easy. And, they've given it free. Therefore, there's a cost involved in that, which is they get to market to us. It's not the end of the world in my mind. It's not the end of the world. Every time I open YouTube, I'm so happy that there's a deal for McDonald's. It knows my fat stomach. It knows that it's what I want. I'd much rather that than when you go to TV1 and you watch a TV ad for... I don't know.
I think this is Anthony's way of telling us that he's already had some McDonald's, or he's been past McDonald's today.
Hey, you know,
how was your McDonald's coffee, Anthony?
Oh, 1 milligram was pretty good, my friend. So, no, I love Google, and I'm really over people hanging on.
The thing is, giving you too much coffee would be like Obix the Ghoul having into that powerful strength potion.
Oh, my God, you have no idea. You don't. This is 1% of me in New Zealand. When I was in America for UK for a while, I was 1,000%. Bigger than what I am. I could do anything.
How did that work out?
That was a bit interesting. We'll go back to another day. So anyway,
maybe we'll discuss that offline.
We want to swing that right back to this main issue about Google leaving Australia. So I want to come back to this because I haven't been. No, it's blooming important. All right, here we go. Let me get right to the
shoot your bolt.
All right, media companies. This is what's happened, people. They had a good damn time. They had a bloody good time, right?
They created content and earned money for their content. Go on.
Sure. And they sat there and they made newspapers, blah, 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 right? They have a pretty big standing in society, traditionally, a media company, right? So anyway, they carried on, and then they got the board of directors and they sat around the tables going, oh, we're doing so much fun. What's this internet thing? We don't know. So back in 1990, when the internet was invented, the media companies went, we don't know what that is. Now, they had 30 damn years for these bozos around the media companies to go, Tom, you've just got an engineering degree in computer science. Would you like to come and tell us, bozos, what this internet is and how we can transition and create a new market? No, we don't want Tom there. We just want to go, let's hate on Google. Let's hate on YouTube. Let's hate on Facebook. We like our old way of doing things.
See, I've been told that Google says to any company that if you want to have your... article searchable by Google or Google search results.
Yeah.
It can't be behind a paywall. So if we can get to it, if we can present the link to people, you have to be able to show it.
Yeah.
And they click on it.
As simple as that.
Yeah, but hang on. If something's behind a paywall, I mean, so that's the thing. It's basically Google says, we're only going to present stuff that is...
Public.
Free.
Yeah.
Not charged for.
Well, But this is the damn thing about human race. We're supposed to grow and innovate. We're not supposed to be static like the commies want us to be. We're supposed to innovate. This is, you know, this is why I hate socialism.
Schumpeterian destruction.
This is why I hate socialism. Socialism believes that we're inert. That's it. Our brain's stopped. we've got everything we need. There's no more innovation.
Life is a state rather than a process.
Yeah, exactly. Which I absolutely despise. So, as a technology person, but here's the cool thing, my friend, is don't eat peanuts. Listen, this is the thing about what happened to the media companies, all right? So they had their little market, and then this is the great innovation. They said, well, we're running the Herald or whatever it is. Let's say it's whatever it is over in 9 o'clock, 9 News on you know, whatever the Australian Journal is. They never innovated. They just said, let's get what we put on print, stick it online. That is not innovating. That is so dumb. That's so stupid. And I've sent my CV to these bastards, and they never bloomin' get back to me. Yeah, whatever. It's true. So here's the thing. These guys never got...
So, Helen, is this all about them not giving you a job?
Partly. Partly, yeah. Partly, probably.
Okay.
But now I have to suffer in the world. I don't mind them not giving me a job, but then solve the solution, you pricks. It happens all the time. If you don't want to give me the job, it's fine. But then don't ruin the world and get Google kicked out.
So what have we got so far? We've got an F-bomb, a B-bomb, and now a P-bomb. Brilliant. I got Andrew on my show, and it was the last time I was on
anyway.
The airwaves.
That's Andrew's comedy. So let me get back to the media company, okay? Because they need it. So basically what's happened with the media company is they want to have their side, and instead of innovating, instead of having real innovation on the internet, they just put their own magazines up, okay? So that was all fine, and then they started losing business to an actual computer science company. And instead of innovating again, they just said, you know what, let's get our boys to lobby the Australian federal government, lobby, and then just make it a good old-fashioned law where if Google disobeys this law, we can effectively go in and arrest the CEO in Australia. That is so barbaric, people. God, I can't believe I'm living in this universe. So what should have they done? And it doesn't take... There's not many problems in this little planet that I don't put my Blomfield brain to that I can't solve, but I'm sick of doing it. But anyway, this is what they could have done, all right? Your telecommunication, the media companies could have done something like this, all right? Something like this. They could have done this. They could have gone, all right, let's have our own digital services as part of our news. Let's do... let's start selling to all the political parties little polling data. So you're reading the Herald, you go to the bottom, blah, 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 just fill this out and you get 10 days free news. It's just a poll. And then Labor pays for that poll so that there's, you know, what do people like to eat? What do people like to drive? God, is it so hard to innovate, you media companies? Do you realise what Google has done in the last 20 years and how much... It feels to me we're living in a planet where basically there's like 5 industries that are innovating and the rest are getting angry that everyone else, that they're innovating, and then going to law and going, we're not innovating, so we want the law to stop the innovation. And that's what the media company's done. So there's so many things that the media company's done. You've got, you could add, sell digital services. There's nothing stopping them doing their own little drop boxes. They could even have some social networking on their platforms if they wanted to. Let's say you're a big media outlet, Andrew, in Australia, and you've got all of Sydney, you know, Sydney Herald. Nothing's stopping you having some social platforms if people can meet. There's nothing to stop you doing some sort of Trade Me eBay services. Goodness, do you realise, if you think about it, the people who should have been the winners of the internet were the media companies? It's so embarrassing for you. We have literally taken your overheads off you, which is printing paper, and made it free for you print, and you idiots haven't even managed to innovate on that. And now, 20 years later, you still haven't rung me up and said, come into our directorship, fire all us bozos and innovate. You've said, Mr. Scott Robinson, can you please make it illegal for Google to put our links on the internet? And Mr. Scott Robinson goes, absolutely, we can't have that. There you go. I
believe you mean Scott Morrison, perhaps?
Yeah.
As in ScoMo?
Yeah, but I don't want to.
Yeah, okay, fine. Let's move on to the port project. I see there's a port automation project that's been
Oh, I know a lot about this.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'd like to hear your views on it. I understand you've worked in the pool.
Absolutely.
And it's owned by the council, isn't it? So they're not exactly an activist shareholder.
No, that's, well, we own the ports as ratepayers.
What's this, we, comrade?
We the ratepayers. What, do you want me to tell you about these machines that run around the thing? All right.
Yeah, crack on and tell us about the automation project and what's being held up.
All right, here we go. All right, now, straight up, it's speculation, but I'm pretty right with everything, I think. So when you automate anything, all right, you have a physical part of the problem, all right? So you have a car or a truck that picks things up and moves it, right? So it picks things up and it moves them A to B. Now, that's the easy part, and that's what everyone gets excited about, especially in New Zealand. It's like why I hate Apple laptops in schools. It's not about the physical shiny thing that's important. It's about the intellectual side of things. So with the Ports of Auckland, they basically said, well, we'll import all these trucks, and we've got the software, which is fine, but the software, it's like computers are dumb, so you have to tell the computer every single thing. So the cranes that move around the ports, there's so much programming to get them to understand the velocities to move, the distances, the designs, and that's human capital for that, all right? It's why you need good staff, you know, why you need standards in society of promoting intellectual endeavourment, because people, there's a lot of smarts that goes into automation, because it's all about things that you have to think in multiple dimensions. And anyone who's done first year mathematics, or rather really stage two mathematics university, you have to learn how to solve mathematical problems in multiple dimensions. And in maths, there's an infinite amount of dimensions. And that's the same with automation. You have to have the ability to say, well, okay, if we picked up that container, but there was a damage in that container, and then there was another container that hadn't been loaded, what algorithm would run? It's really complicated, and then it needs to be all tailored for New Zealand systems, so our time zone, the weights of different things, then the timing and the layout, and all that is human capital. So when you buy anything in computers, this is what we always do in New Zealand. We see the shiny stuff. We think that's most the job. No, it's not. It's the intellectual side of all these technologies that's the big thing. It's the human skill. It's the complex programming. And a lot of this is whiteboard stuff. It's like, all right, we need to work out what would happen if this moved and how this would change. And that's the investment. And too many sales reps bamboozle CEOs by going, there's the machine that does this. Yeah, it does this if you've got great IT capital. And while Andrew's offline, I'm going to talk about back at the schools again, which is, oh my goodness. So what's been happening is primary school kids, 7, 8, 9-year-olds, are being told, parents, buy them an iPad, okay? And the stupid cliche that their kids will be left behind if they don't have one. It's such junk, okay? I do so much computer stuff, and I kid you not, the best way to learn computer science is with a pen and paper, right? Pen and paper. So stop wasting time importing huge, expensive Apple iPads, which we're paying millions, billions for as a country, billions, all to America, all just straight off to Steve Jobs' friends, for a very dumbed down device, actually, often. And what, instead of doing that, get a couple of the teachers and train them in real IT, okay? Human capital, and say, you're going to do an actual, some computer skills in classroom. And that is different to just simply handing around an iPad, colouring things in, opening Word, shutting Word, opening Word. That's all rubbish, absolute junk. You get a couple of people that know computer science to take the kids and say, kids, it's not even about the physical device. First, we're going to talk about this concept of what an algorithm is. All right? Just an algorithm. Get kids to bake a cake and follow what's called an algorithm to bake a cake. Oh, kids understand algorithms. Right. Next thing, you get them to program something. It could be programming something as simple as a, something to make spaghetti by pushing the right buttons. Understand the concept of programming. You don't need a stupid Apple device to teach a kid programming, right? It's the concept. It's the intellectual endeavorment. And here's the thing. By the time you taught your kids any interface, it's going to be obsolete. Even if you're so wise to teach your kids JavaScript at school, by the time they've left school, that's out of date. So, no, teach them the concepts of what an algorithm is. Teach them the concepts of what a programming is. Teach them the concepts of how a computer actually processes. Teach them the concepts of Boolean maths. We don't teach Boolean maths. We teach algebraic maths. We teach calculus. We teach statistics. Zero in the Boolean, right? So teach them damn Boolean maths, number one. So if we want to actually teach computer science, teach them Boolean. That does not need an expensive iPad.
Actually, I first studied Boolean maths in, well, it was sixth form, but I was in fifth form. I did sixth form computer science when I was in fifth form. So you can actually learn Boolean maths at high school.
That's good.
Now for something completely different.
Tech. And meeting people. What would you say, Meetup versus Tinder?
Oh, absolutely Meetup. Yeah, Tinder's a waste of time.
Yeah, I've now attended a Meetup event and found that really enjoyable.
Well, quickly, the last 3 minutes of the show, tell you how I got on to Meetup, all right? So
it's a website.
I flew to Boston and to meet a Google executive, actually. Guy called Luke Hutchinson, actually. He's a TED Talk. Anyway, when I got there, I was having a great time, and the people in the hostel said, you should join this website. And we opened it, and there was a dance party at Harvard University that night that I landed in Boston. And I spent the night in Boston boogieing down to a huge dance party for free. Time of life. See, there you go. That's Meetup. Anyway. Anyway, Andrew, that's pretty much getting to the end of the show. He's just saying he learnt Boolean because he's ahead of his class, but trust me, most people don't. Teach them computers, teach them the fundamentals, pen and paper. You don't need a stupid iPad. If you really want to put actual physical devices in, Linux. Once you teach the kid Linux, they can go to any platform after that.
Sorry, was that Linux?
Linux. Linux is computer science. Apple is just Apparage? Is it that derogatory word? Anyway, that's our show, Andrew.
Thanks, guys.